The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Hi there, welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. So I wanted to talk today a little bit about education, a little bit of a mishmash of a show today for you. But we're going to start with education. And this point that I want to bring out, there are a couple different points. But one of them is that in communism, they kill the educated people. And that seems to be something that we sort of conveniently forget, because we have a lot of apologists for communism. They call themselves democratic socialists now. It's all the same thing. They're commies. They're communists. They believe in the collective. They believe in government. They believe that government can solve all the problems, that government should be all powerful. And this is problematic because government is made up of people, and people create the problems that they think that they can solve. So I've had this on my heart for a long time to talk about, because it just seems like we forget that. I was actually really proud of my kids this morning, because we were talking about these kinds of things, and this idea that Marxism makes so much sense, except that its axioms are false. So it makes sense. It's like, well, wouldn't it be great if everybody everybody worked together? This idea of from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Gosh, that just sounds so good. And I remember I got into a very long conversation with a young actress years ago who believed in, she said she was a communist because she believed communism was the way, was the hope, you know, for mankind. And I had this really long conversation with her about why communism fails. And at the end of it, and she agreed with everything. She said, well, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I see that. She's one of these people who just believes that it's never really been tried, which, of course, Solzhenitsyn, if you read the Gulag Archipelago, he makes the case very effectively that this is the purest form of communism, that everything else is just a pipe dream, because it all devolves. It can't help it. It devolves into what we saw in the Soviet Union and what failed, abjectly failed, right? And so, but I had this long conversation with this chick, she agreed, because she had no arguments, right? So she agreed, she went along. And then at the very end, after agreeing with me, she said, but I still think that it would be the best way. And this is the mark of terrible immaturity, which of course is the direction that our culture has been headed for quite a while, is this tremendous immaturity that we see in the marketplace of ideas. That we should be able to just laugh away. But we can't, because young people take themselves so seriously. Immature people take themselves so seriously, and they don't realize how immature they are. And so at the very end of our conversation, she said, yes, but still think it would be great. It still is really the best way. And I'm like, no, it's not. And so I asked my kids this morning, why does Marxism fail? Why does it not work? What is the one sort of the axiomatic requirement of communism in order for it to succeed that it can't have? What's that one thing? Do you know what it is? Human selfishness. Human greed. Can't solve for that. If there were a solution for that, it would work. It would be perfect. It would be fantastic. But you can't. There's no way to mitigate for human selfishness. And I can make the Darwinian argument for selfishness, for why it's a necessity of humanity. There would be no furtherance of the species without this sort of selfishness that we have. Women choose suitable mates. They don't just choose some random guy that doesn't appeal to them. They choose based on appeal. And typically we think that men drive everything, but typically women are the ones that are making the choice, typically. So you cannot resolve for that. Okay, moving on. The only way we realize in education, the only way we actualize our learning is through expression, through rhetoric, through the expression of that learning. It has to come from our thoughts before we actually know it. Does that make sense? I know it seems like it's a catch-22. How can you know it if you don't learn it first? But it's not actually the learning of it that ingrains it. It's the expression of it that fully ingrains it. Because your brain has to accept it and then be able to express it in order to truly have synthesized it. So when we originate and we disgorge something from our own thoughts, we are showing that we have mastered it. So we have to take ownership of knowledge, not just mimicry, which is the problem that we have in our schools today, is that they are busy teaching mimicry and teaching it to sort of varying degrees how do I put it? So I recently had Shane Trotter on the show, and Shane's written this book called Setting the Bar. It's around here somewhere. Setting the Bar, I'm pretty sure. And he talks about how when we have disabled students, we have students who are less capable, but we mainstream them. We mainstream them. We put them in the classroom. We assign them an IEP, a specialist who goes with them, or we just tell the teacher that they need that the teacher has to offer them special considerations. And this idea that when the teacher offers special considerations to a student, other students start to go, well, I should get special. And in fact, the teachers sometimes, because it's a lot for a teacher with 30 kids to offer specialized, the dumbed down version for five of them, they just offer that same version for everybody. So even the mimicry that we are asking for from our students, we have a tendency to dumb down, especially when teachers' performance can be tied to grades. Well, that's just incentivizing the teacher to give better grades. And how does the teacher do that? The teacher finds ways to accept poorer performance from their students so that they can give them better grades so that they can keep their jobs. It's it's incentivizing failure. I mean, it maybe not quite that far, but it certainly incentivizes poor performance on the part of everybody. It's sort of a devolving paradigm. It's self-defeating in a sense. So we talk about multiple choice exams. Those are completely inadequate to show learning because those really just show mimicry, memorization skills. And it's great. Younger kids have terrific skills with memorization, but learning ought to be more than that. And that's probably why we have such a crisis in our youth today of, you know, whether young people who perform, who can perform at jobs where they're asked to do more than just rote tasks. Let's see. This article came up for me. College students don't need protection from the truth. This is interesting. This is like now maybe the pendulum is starting to swing back because we're starting to realize that we've got a big problem. And so I believe this is off the Wall Street Journal. Carleton College professors Amna Khalid and Jeffrey Aaron Snyder wrote in the Chronicle of Higher Education, when debates about trigger warnings first erupted, there was little to no research on their effectiveness, trigger warnings, right? Today, there's an emerging body of peer-reviewed research that we can consult. And they continue, we are not aware of a single experimental study that has found sufficient benefits of using trigger warnings, looking specifically at trauma survivors, including those with a diagnosis of PTSD. There's a study that found that trigger warnings were not helpful, even when they warned about content that closely matched the survivor's traumas. What's more, they found that trigger warnings actually increased the anxiety of individuals with the most severe PTSD, prompting them to, quote, view trauma as more central to their life narrative. Trigger warnings, they concluded, may be most harmful to the very individuals they were designed to protect. So intrinsically, we understand that the whole trigger warning thing is juvenile, again, infantile. But more than that, it's worse than we thought. Like we think it's bad enough, right? We go, well, that's ridiculous. It's worse than that. It actually brings about a worse experience for the people that it's intended to protect the most. And that ought to give us pause about how we protect our children growing up. And I mean, you know, overprotect. I don't mean protect, but overprotect our children as they grow. So we'll have to leave it there. I'm going to take a quick break, but I'll be back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. All right. Welcome back to the show. I'm Sam Sorbo. So I started earlier with this idea that that the communists are anti-education. I got to look this up, how I phrased it. They kill the educated people. That's what the communists do. And we forget this at our own peril. So I decided that I had a friend named Hangnor, who won the Oscar for his portrayal of a Cambodian refugee, a Cambodian translator, I think he was, in The Killing Fields. And if you haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. It's an Oscar-worthy film, and that's back when the Oscars actually meant something. By the way, did everybody notice that that nobody's paying any attention to the awards ceremonies anymore? Even Saturday Night Live has started doing sketches basically to try to bring attention to themselves, because it's all going off the rails. Because I think people intrinsically know, not everybody. There are a lot of dumb people out there, but you know, they went to public school. My daughter joked with me yesterday, but Mom, you went to public school. I'm like, yeah, I'm one of the escapees or something like that. All right. So I decided that I was going to bring, this is the book. This is the book, Cambodian Odyssey, written by Hang, who I had the pleasure of working with on a little film years and years ago before I really understood. Well, I didn't understand what he had gone through. I knew that communism was bad, and I'm not sure how I had figured that out, but I did know that. But I did not understand how precious this individual was. He eventually was killed in a so-called robbery that the LA police basically refused to investigate because this is me talking. But I suspect that they understood that it was a hit job by the Khmer Rouge, by the communists, because he had $200 on him and he was found in a deserted alley. So it clearly wasn't a robbery. And, you know, they tried to say, well, it was a robbery gone bad. That's all that there is to it. No, you know, I don't even think he had $200. He had his money that he had. And this individual survived the torture camps three times. He'd never met anybody who had survived them three times. He was a practicing medical doctor. He was an OBGYN. He was educated in the south of France. He was a practicing medical doctor in Cambodia, in Phnom Penh, when the Khmer Rouge walked through and made everybody leave the city and put them all out into the rural environment. And he, at that point, to save his own life and the lives of his family, as best he could, he started telling everybody that he didn't have an education, that he'd been a taxi driver. And in the chaos, it was fairly easy to reinvent yourself if you were clever enough to do that. And he recognized that they were taking thinking people and shooting them, taking educated people and shooting them. When they cleared out Phnom Penh, they literally had doctors leaving the hospitals while their patients were under anesthesia and just leaving the patient there on the table. Because under communism, there is no emotion. There's no emotion allowed, except anger, I suppose. In any case, I thought I would read a little bit from his story. I highly recommend this book. He does give a couple of times in the book, he gives a warning that if you have a sensitive stomach, maybe you want to skip that chapter. I've read the entire book. I've actually lent it to people and insisted on getting it back. It is a precious, amazing book that will enlighten you, as I'm going to try to do right now. So one night when now he's living out in the rural countryside, they've become rice farmers, forced labor. And there were sort of better times and there were worse times. And so, for instance, they had to farm rice and they weren't allowed to eat it. They had to send it into the Anka Lu, who was the power. And then they were allotted a small allotment of rice to the village. They were organized by villages with a communist overseer kind of a thing. One night when we were all under our large mosquito net together, Khoi, between her mother and me, a faint creaking noise came from the pathway outside. Immediately, I was wide awake. It was a bicycle, I decided. Then the creaking stopped and there was a soft knock at the door. I got up to peer through the cracks. It was Niang, the chief of the village. Yes, what do you want? I said. Nor Hang, I know you're a doctor, he said. Please help me save my child. I was silent and afraid. I am not a doctor, I said at last. Your aunt told me you were a doctor, She said you were a doctor in the military with the rank of captain. I don't care what you did before, but now my child has a fever. He's very sick. So come save my baby boy. He's only 11 months old. I thought, that big mouth Kim told the village chief. I was only a student, I said through the door. Never a doctor. Niang was losing his patience. Everybody here knows you were a doctor. Now, come on, and don't be scared. Anka doesn't know about your past, and I will never tell. Come on, I'm the leader here. I'll take care of you. Please give me a minute. I did some quick thinking. Niang had come alone, without soldiers. He had a reputation as a good-natured man. Earlier that day, he had asked our work group at the canal site whether any of us had fever medicines, but nobody had answered. He knew I was a doctor even then, but he hadn't singled me out in public. He had waited for dark instead. Huoi sat up in the mosquito net. What's wrong? She whispered. Are they going to take you away? Don't worry, I whispered back, changing from my sarong into trousers. Everything is going to be all right. I followed Niang to his home, which was lit with lanterns inside, the light showing through the cracks. Niang had called on some other medical practitioners before me, and they were standing around the baby. Two of them were traditional rural healers. They were dark-skinned, heavily tattooed, and wore only shorts. They had prepared a green liquid medicine, grinding palm sugar, black pepper, and various leaves together in a mixture with unboiled water. They had fed it to the baby with a spoon. They had also sprinkled what was supposed to be holy water on the baby's forehead. When I came in, they were chanting to drive away the evil spirits. So to be clear, I prefaced this passage with the image of the Khmer Rouge just literally marching through the cities and clearing everybody out and forcing doctors to leave their patients who were under anesthesia, just to leave them open in the middle of a surgery, to leave them for the patients to wake up bleeding to death, basically, in excruciating pain. Like, that is communism. And don't try to argue with me that that's not the real communism, because that is the real communism, and all the other crap simply devolves into that. That's where it goes. That's the end of the road. And so now this fully fledged doctor is too afraid to admit that he's a doctor. And you have the lack of healthcare. This is why when they pushed through Obamacare, I said, because their offset, their viewpoint, they don't know that this is their viewpoint, but this is the result of something such as Obamacare. There is no need for any more research. We have reached the pinnacle of our medical essays, and there's nowhere else for us to go. So we might as well just stop that and rely on all of our gained knowledge until this point. That is what communism and socialism, which is socialism, is simply the pathway toward communism. That's what it is at the end of the road. All right, I'm going to finish this little outtake. Two young female Khmer Rouge doctors were also there, in the usual black uniforms and short haircuts. One of them was drawing a white liquid from an ampule marked thiamine into a syringe. Oh no, I thought. Please don't. The baby was lying on a table wrapped tightly in blankets. I pulled the covers back to look. A swollen belly, skin hot to the touch, occasional tremors in the body. Without lab tests, it was hard to be sure, but my guess was meningitis as a secondary condition brought on by the fever. How can I save my son? Myung asked me. Take the blankets away, I said. Your son is too hot. You need to cool him down. Moisten a cloth with cold water and pat with it. No, commanded the mittenary with the syringe. The baby has a fever because it is cold. Don't take away the blankets. She was wrong, but I did not want to assert myself. She and her comrade were in charge. The one with the syringe wiped the needle between her fingers and approached the child. I winced. It was not just a matter of an unsterile needle. Thiamine, or vitamin B1, is sometimes used in Western medicine as an ingredient in multivitamin treatments, but only in tiny quantities. It is never injected alone. The mittenary had drawn 5 cc's into the syringe. I doubted that she could read the label on the ampule, which was in French, or that she knew that she was administering an overdose. She dabbed the needle into the unconscious child and pushed the chamber until all the liquid was inside the little boy's body. The traditional healers chanted in a monotone. The Khmer Rouge women waited, sullen and bored. Myung looked at me anxiously, but I kept silent and stayed in the background. The oil lamps cast our shadows on the wall. Outside, the crickets chirped, and the bullfrogs on the lake made their deep croaking noise. The child began shaking, not with light tremors, but with deep, terrible convulsions. It fell into a coma with its unseeing eyes wide open. It twitched for another 5 or 10 minutes, and then it was dead. I excused myself and went outside. I took a deep breath. The chorus of crickets and frogs was louder here. Their sounds came from all directions, filling the night air. I wanted to scream. How I hated it all. If I had told Myung that the child shouldn't get the injection, the Khmer Rouge medics probably would have ignored me. If I insisted, they would have reported me for interfering, and then I would have been taken to Ankalu. To them, anything in an ampule was medicine. If a patient died after getting an injection, it was the patient's fault. What was the purpose of a revolution like that, I wondered? What was the gain? What was the progress when a society went from ignorant herbal healers to monkeys like the Khmer Rouge? What about the kind of knowledge that was taught in medical school? Wasn't it worth anything? Were we supposed to forget that it existed? Maybe, I thought, just maybe if I had been more forceful, the child wouldn't have died. If I had told the medics to stand back. If I had put confidence and authority into my bearing, they might have obeyed me. Then I could have removed the blankets, cooled the baby down, and prevented them from giving the injection. In doing so, I would have risked my own life, but I would have saved the child's. I hadn't done it. I had protected my own life instead. How I hated it. The country was ruled by the ignorant. Already there were unnecessary deaths. To avoid our own deaths, people like me were doing things we knew were wrong. And as we scrambled to protect ourselves or sought to gain favor with the new powers, the old relationships were torn apart. Doctors broke their professional oaths. Families argued. People like my aunt became collaborators and use their influence with the leaders to satisfy old grudges. I stood in the dark thinking about the new regime. I had already seen more of it than I wanted. What I did not know was that everything that had happened so far was mild and harmless compared with what was still to come. I said this on this show before. We're in the first crime scene. And they will put us in the van if we don't kick and scream and shout. So we're going to take a quick break here. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Don't forget that if you are tired of feeding the beast, so to speak, if you want to buy American made, I have a resource for you. Simply email me at buyusmade.protonmail.com at protonmail.com. buyusmade@protonmail.com. You can email me there and we'll connect. It's part of the solution that I've found. I'm working on some others and so there's that. Also, don't forget, if you want, you can simply email me with comments on the show. I'm going to go through some comments later in the show today because I do appreciate your comments. So don't forget, samsorbo.com is if you need anything from me, you can find it there typically. And also, don't forget my show on Epoch TV, EPOCHTV.com. And then just scroll down till you see my face for my show, School's Out with Sam Sorbo. I'm having such a lot of fun doing it. It's completely different from the radio, although it's a lot of my same thoughts, but they're maybe a little bit better hashed out since I write the show myself. Thanks so much for listening. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. I'll be right back. And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm your host, Sam Sorbo. I want to talk today, right now, about childrenshealthdefense.org and this story about a young mother that they've now published. I love this, by the way. It's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It's an amazing website. It's an amazing resource. He does really quite astonishing work. And so I love to support him. And so this story came through. This young mother, 37 years old, did not want to get the jab. And unfortunately, she was coerced into receiving it because the school told her she would not be allowed to volunteer in her young daughter's kindergarten class. I think it was kindergarten. It might have been first grade, unless she had it. They insisted that everybody on premises have proof of the jab. I call it the jab. I'm trying to parse my words because I will put this on YouTube. They'll probably censor it. Maybe we'll see. I'm just talking about a story that's out, right? And this is a story that seems to be well researched. So it's called Children's Health Defense News and Views, but the publication is called The Defender. And so they gave an exclusive interview to The Defender. It's amazing that people, have you guys seen Victory TV, by the way? They're saying the same thing. It's amazing. We've got these alternative news sources now, which is a wonderful thing. Although they're being sort of quashed by social media. And did everybody notice that Facebook sort of went offline for a brief time? And they're saying, oh, you know, we just needed to revamp something or whatever. And I think everybody and his brother is going, no, you did that because the court ruling just came down, or, you know, the 60 Minutes gal, the whistleblower came out. And you're covering your tracks. There's something going on there. So anyway, back to this story. Jessica Berg Wilson, 37 years old, stay-at-home mom. Her husband actually got the injection because he needed it for travel and for work. But she didn't want it. She actually reads The Defender and does, you know, and follows up with sort of the stuff that's happening out there. And so she had what we used to call a healthy skepticism, and did not want to get it. But then she thought, well, for the sake of my children, I want to be able to spend time with them in school because they have to go to school. Folks, they don't have to go to school. Ugh. This is like I don't know how I fell into this mission work, but anyway, she went and got, which one did she get? I think she got Johnson, the J&J, and in a Seattle pharmacy. Apparently they told her which one she was getting. She didn't actually choose. But she didn't have any underlying conditions. And what she suffered from about between 1 and 2 weeks after she got this injection was called vaccine-induced thrombotic thrombocytopenia. Thrombocytopenia. VITT. Vaccine-induced. That is the medical diagnosis. I don't know if you believe in medicine. You know, if you're one of these follow the science people, that's the medical diagnosis for what she had. It is very rare. It is sometimes fatal. It is a blood clotting condition that is triggered by these, what they're calling vaccines. And so in an exclusive interview, her husband and her uncle both told the defender that they posted her obit, her obituary, with the doctor's, the medical establishment's diagnosis, and Twitter took it down. They labeled it as misleading and misinformation and prevented it from being shared. So people couldn't interact with the story. They couldn't share the story. She went in late August. On September 7th, she finally succumbed. Apparently, she was vehemently opposed to getting the vaccine, but then she decided to get it because she wanted to be able to be a room mom. And by the way, folks, full disclosure here, I used to be that person. Okay, but she's not going to be spending any more time with her kids now because of what the school insisted. And there ought to be ramifications for that. There ought to be a lawsuit against the school for coercing her. I don't care. I know that the vaccine companies have some sort of weird get out of lawsuit free card that the government decided to give them. But the people who are coercing people into self-harm ought to be held accountable. To me, that's the way in. That's the way in, because these two little kids now do not have their mommy. And this husband has no longer the woman of his dreams, what he calls his forever love. In her eulogy, her uncle eulogized her this way. Jessica died as a direct result of an experimental vaccine, a vaccine that she vehemently opposed taking. Jessica felt coerced. She felt robbed of her ability to choose, her ability to say no to a medical procedure she did not want, was taken from her. During the last weeks of her life, the world turned dark with heavy-handed vaccine mandates. Local and state governments were determined to strip away her right to consult her wisdom and enjoy her freedom. Her passion to be actively involved in her children's education, which included being a room mom in her child's classroom, was once again blocked by government mandate. He said Jessica was informed she could not enter her daughter's school campus for any reason unless vaccinated. And as a dutiful mother, Jessica wanted to be able to take her children to school and volunteer there as needed. Thus, under duress, she relented and took the vaccine. She knew as a 37-year-old healthy mom, there really was no reason for her to get the vaccine. But she felt coerced. She didn't feel it was needed for her, her husband said. But then as the mandates came out, Jessica and those mothers who are very involved in their children's lives, she wanted to be involved in every step of their lives. That was her main priority, her kids. So I am here to tell you, if you want to be involved in your children's lives, take on the responsibility of their education. Do not outsource it, and do not allow yourself to be coerced into doing things that you don't want to do for yourself for the sake of getting access to your own children. Okay, that's it. Jessica Berg Wilson, an exceptionally healthy and vibrant 37-year-old young mother with no underlying health conditions, passed away from COVID vaccine-induced thrombotic thrombocytopenia. She did not want to get vaccinated. That was the post on Twitter that was censored. And I think that Twitter ought to be held accountable for this. But what is the damage? How can we put a damage on that? That's where this all gets so nebulous. Now, how do I tie this back to the story from Hang Noor's book? Think about it. Their freedom, his freedom was taken in an instant. His entire freedom. After the Khmer Rouge, the communists walked through Phnom Penh and cleared out all the city, not just Phnom Penh, cleared out all the cities and forced the citizens into slavery and servitude. And removed, by the way, they told people not to pack up. They told them, don't bother packing up. It won't be forever. It's just a short trip. Like, they lied, which is what's happening today. Now, you might think that I'm exaggerating. You just don't know. Read this book and then tell me what kind of exaggeration you think I'm doing, okay? Because we went through trials after World War II about forcing people into medical test situations, forcing people to become guinea pigs. And we decided, as a world population, we decided that that was a bad idea and that we would never do it again. Now, you tell me what the difference is now. She wanted access to her own children, and she was told no. Now, you can say, but she could always take her kids out of school. But really, how much freedom is there for a mother to make that choice? Clearly, she didn't feel that she had the freedom to make that choice. All right, quick break here. We'll be back with some more fun stuff, so stay tuned. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. All right, welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. We're going to have a little bit of fun now. I got a couple different stories to talk to you about. But first, mail call, because that's kind of fun. All right. Hi, Sam. I saw you at your initial Steamboat Institute event several years ago, and your book, They're Your Kids, changed our life. We've been homeschooling for 4 years now, and I just started a classical conversations group here in Steamboat. Anywho, I'd love to coordinate a time to collaborate the next time you're in Steamboat. Isn't that lovely? I'm so happy. My book is helping people, and that just is thrilling for me. I'm on a crusade, and honestly, anything you can do to help me get the message out is greatly appreciated. Here's another one. I'm an acupuncturist and a businesswoman. I chose helping other families instead of having my own. I watch your show through epic times. Education has always been my passion and avenue to help others shine. Your work is so exciting. I share your insights with my patients, kindling the fire of life within each. I encourage people to learn the truth and share it with those behind them. Keep doing what you do so well. Thank you for all you've done. Hundreds of lives have been blessed by your enthusiasm and your simplicity. Ooh, I like that. Simplicity. It's not rocket science. It's simpler than that. All right. There's that. And then there's, let's see. I love this. This is a kind of a meme, but I'll describe it to you. It's a mom holding her laundry bin, like she's on her way to do laundry. And there's a little boy in front of her, and he's got all goofed up hair, and he's wearing sunglasses. He's got a cigarette sticking out of his mouth. He's probably, you know, six years old or whatever. And he's holding a bottle of wine. And the caption is, "No, you can't be Hunter Biden for Halloween." Oh, he's stark naked. Sorry. I probably should have led with that. A little naked boy with the cigarette hanging out of his mouth and the sunglasses and the bottle of wine. And no, you can't be Hunter Biden. Okay, let's see. The other thing that caught my eye today, 3 days after Gabby Petito was last seen alive at the Mary Piglet's restaurant in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Brian Landry used her bank card in Wyoming. That's according to the family attorney. That is it's so disconcerting. You can look at his state of mind. This is the lawyer speaking on the Dr. Phil show. You can look at his state of mind by his actions. He ran, he stole her credit card. He used her credit card to get home and then ran from the police. That's going to show a lot what he was thinking back then. So they're still looking for him. This is just terrible. Okay. So there's that. And then let's see, last little bit, Dave Chappelle is getting into hot water, which is what he does so well. But I have to share this with you because I found it so funny and sad, but funny. Gender is a fact he's come out with now. And there, of course, the transgender community is not going to be happy about that. In this article, let's see. Oh, I'm not sure where this is. But anyway, comedian Dave Chappelle is pushing back against the left's stance on gender, saying gender is a fact during his Netflix stand-up comedy special, which was released earlier this week. He told the crowd he's Team TERF. You know what a TERF is? It's in my book. Words for Warriors, TERF. It stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist. So these are feminists who believe that women are women and therefore men really should butt the heck out. That men who try to be women are appropriating something that they have no license to do. And so the one of the first ones I think was Martina Navratilova, and then another one who's actually, so these aren't necessarily lesbians, they're just trans exclusionary radical feminists is the new term for them, was J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series. And she was, and her comment actually wasn't even that bad, as I recall. I remember like looking it up. But boy, they just went after her and they canceled her because of it. And he goes on to say, now, I am not saying that to say trans women aren't women. I'm just saying that those, and he uses the P word to talk about women's private parts. He says those P word that they got, you know what I mean? I'm not saying it's not the P word, but it's beyond the P word, or it's impossible P word, which is a very funny joke, actually. I'm sorry. That's very funny because it's like the Beyond Burger or the Impossible Burger. Sorry. That I just found that very, very funny. And so I thought I had to share that with you guys today. He said the transgender community want him dead for his jokes. That's according to the Daily Beast. They just rail into him. He apparently befriended a transgender activist by the name of Daphne Dorman. And apparently Daphne Dorman died by suicide in 2019, which is unfortunately not uncommon. Because what they discovered, and this is according to Johns Hopkins, who was a leader in the new science of transitioning people surgically from one gender to the other. They followed up with their patients like good, like a good medical community would. And they discovered that there was absolutely no change in the degree of happiness reported by their patients. Because you cannot solve an emotional problem or a spiritual problem with a physical solution. It just doesn't work. And so they discontinued their entire service because in the medical community, there's something known as the Hippocratic Oath, where doctors swear to first do no harm. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but the original Hippocratic Oath, which has been modified over the years, the original one literally said, I will not supply abortifacients to young women, to women, pregnant women. That was in the original Hippocratic Oath. And then they changed it because it's okay to kill babies. I'm just saying. Anyway, he befriended this transgender activist, Daphne Dorman. He referenced Dorman during his Sticks and Stones comedy special, and he noted that Dorman was laughing the hardest at his trans jokes during a practice set. But he is still not above criticism. People are criticizing him. I find his stuff, I find him absolutely brilliant and a little bit raunchy for me, but he is very funny, and I appreciate his, what I have to term as bravery at this point, because there's such a wokeness that's out there that I find also offensive, right? And so somebody who goes up against the wokeness, I think, deserves my respect, even though there are certain things about him that I'm like, yeah, I mean, he uses words that, of course, I don't use and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm just saying, you know, God bless him. He said, I've never seen somebody in such a hilarious predicament not have a sense of humor about it, talking about basically people who are transgender that finds them hilarious. And I suppose there's a point to that. Like at some point you have to go, this is just crazy. Like, I feel like I'm a completely different person than the person that I actually am. That's just hilarious. I mean crazy, like funny crazy, not crazy crazy. Although, you know, you could go with that too. Anyway, that's Dave Chappelle, and I'm sure he's sticking to it. All right, so that's going to be it for me for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. I'll say one more time. You can go to my website, samsorbo.com. You can always get my new poster, my Words for Warriors poster there. I'm very excited about that one because it's doing really well and people seem to be really liking it. And, you know, I made it on a whim. I thought it was hilarious. And so on the poster, you see the definitions of words, how they have changed the meanings of words. So disagreement equals racism, for instance, is one of those on there, you know. It's just fun. It makes a great gift, a nice little inexpensive gift that sort of packs a little bit of a punch kind of thing. So that's available at samsorbo.com. And if you're looking to buy Fully American, by the way, that's American, created by an American and produced in America. So, but if you want to buy more American, then just go to email me at buyusmade@protonmail.com. And, oh, and lastly, I want to tell you about Nutramedics because we struck a deal with Nutramedics. They're a great company, also U.S. made, full on Americans. They're just fantastic people. I got to say, I really, they they've just been great to us. And I love their products. So I use their Relax Medics and their Mood Medics. They have like a stress pack, and I find it really helps me with my stress levels. And that's just a huge boon to me because I've been running high stress lately, and I'm sure it's all the crap that's going on is just sort of stressing me out, even though I'm pretty calm person, like typically pretty level, whatever, but there's just this generator that's been amped up over the course of the past, what is it, almost 2 years now. So if you go to Nutramedics and you use the code Sorbo, you'll get your discount. They also donate to Sorbo Studios, as well as many other very worthy causes. I think it's like 50% of their proceeds they donate to worthy causes. So have a look at that. Go to Nutramedics.com. It's spelled with an X, and you can see everything in the links. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.